We are Missouri Farm Bureau Insurance, and we're for the people of Missouri. We're for brewmasters, stockbrokers, beauty queens, and truck drivers. Whatever you do, if you're a Missourian, we're for you. We are Missouri Farm Bureau Insurance, and we've got Missouri covered.
The Border Patrol is presented by Walker Medical Linen Services, locally owned and operated, and HLAC certified, meeting the highest industry standards. Walker has partnerships with hospitals, surgery centers, and medical clinics in and around the metro area. Walker Medical Linen Services in Kansas City and online at walkermls.com.
Welcome back to the show. Yeah, Andy Rogers is going to talk to us at 9:30. The Royals were in Oakland yesterday, and they're playing the Angels tonight. So she might be in your vicinity, Nate, or no?
I don't.
California-wise, that's the vicinity, sort of.
I mean, yeah.
How far are you from where the Angels play?
7 hours, 20 miles.
Yeah, I mean, honestly, it depends on the time of day out here. If you're trying to drive in traffic from where I am to Anaheim, I think it is going to take you probably a couple hours. If it's an off traffic time, my guess is like 45 minutes.
Not bad.
Traffic out here.
It's back.
Oh, man. Lebo, if you didn't like the traffic in Miami, you probably wouldn't love it out here.
You can keep Miami and Los Angeles together. I don't need either one of them. And that's a shame. My brother-in-law and sister-in-law live out there. We've gone out to see them once back in the
day.
They live in Orange County. And
do they like it?
They love the weather.
That's Anaheim, right? In Anaheim,
it's,
and Orange County.
Yeah, it is. They're more up near the mountains there. I think the area is called Coto de Caza.
Right. What do you think of Lorenzo Cain being DFA'd by Milwaukee?
You know, it's interesting. When you hear the sound bites, it sounds like he's done. That's what it sounds like to me, which is fine. I mean, he's 36 years old. Remember, this guy wasn't some phenom prospect with 18 years old up in the league. It's pretty amazing to me that he just now got his 10th year of service time. And that's because of injuries and things like that and not getting up to the show early. He was a phenomenal baseball player for the Royals, and he was really good for the first couple of years of his contract with the Brewers. Remember, it was something like $75, $80 million or something like that, right, for 5 years. And I think he's played about 100 games the last 3 years. That was the COVID-shortened year, and he actually opted out after a little bit of it and only played a couple of games. But then he was hurt a bunch last year. He's not performing this year, and he's hurt. So they probably, I think, I don't know how you judge these contracts. Are they happy they signed him? I'm sure they were, because they actually made the postseason and things like that. It was important. He was an important part of that the first couple of years. But then now they're like, he's making like $18 million this year. We're sitting here complaining about Carlos Santana making $10 million batting 150. Lorenzo Cain's making $18 million batting 170. He's not what he used to be. But he was a tremendous part of the trade from the Brewers. And it took him, as Nate said earlier, a little while to get his footing because he got hurt. I remember one of the games he was out there in Oakland. He got hurt trying to catch a ball early on in his career, missed almost the entire year. And then once he got his body right, man, he was a phenomenal baseball player. You know, he never looked like the smoothest, most natural hitter, but he learned to put the ball in play and not strike out a bunch, and he was fast and instinctual on the base pass and made the right moves. And, man, could he go get it. It was a shame that he never won a gold glove while he was here with the Royals, because he played gold glove
That's
level center field and was just incredible. And that moment you were talking about, Steven, in that game six.
Yes.
I was up in the press box when that happened. We were not allowed in the press box as overflow people, except when the rain came. For that 45-minute rain delay, I'm like, I'm not sitting out here in this rain. So I just went and stood in the back of the press box. And didn't have the greatest view, because when you're up there in the back of the press box, you have to kind of squat down to see the entire field. But the place, it's amazing to me how alive that stadium was from about September of 14 through you know, really most of 2017.
But that was such a great night.
And now you go out there, and I mean, like even opening day, they can't sell it out. I mean, people weren't going home in the rain. I mean, they didn't care. They were just out there to have fun for all of those postseason games and really a lot of the regular season games too. So much energy and excitement. And
this could surprise you.
We have forgotten how much fun baseball can be.
That rain
over the
delay,
last several years.
I was filled with so much anxiety.
Why?
Because
Ryan Madsen had given up a home run.
I didn't think Wade Davis was going to come back out. It was everything.
Of course
it was. But at the time.
Yes, I know.
But, you know, I just, you know, I go. Oh.
And I remember being in the, seven, you know, in know, the, oh. in the clubhouse after the game talking to the coaches about that play, right? They had said they had studied and they knew that Bautista was going to throw the ball back to the infield and. So it was a go all the way. It's just a perfect storm kind of play. And that, you know, I've told you before, when you come up to the sixth floor to go to the Royals press box, I'm haunted by this very young Adalberto Mondesi on the jumping around on the mound when they won the World Series.
Why are you haunted by that?
He didn't really deserve to be there, but he was there. I'm not haunted by it. I see it, and I'm like, there's a really good picture of his face, and he didn't do anything. But yeah. There's a Sports Illustrated, a couple things over on the right that is just Lorenzo Cain, the shot they put on the front of it when he was jumping up in the air with a slightly higher vertical leap than you.
Wow.
Because he was so excited
that was
about how they played. It was just awesome. What a great time. And, you know, we're talking about a player who doesn't play here anymore. So this may anger some Chiefs fans because you're not supposed to talk about guys who aren't here anymore, ask questions about guys who aren't here anymore.
Right.
But we love the players who played here. That's what's cool about Kansas City. If you were a part of a special time, they love it. And I thought it was hokey in 2017 when it was the final game for Kane, Hosmer, Moustakas, and Escobar. And they had a press conference afterwards and a big video thing on the thing. I thought it was a little hokey. But
why?
That's Kansas City, man. We love our players. And we celebrate them when we know they're going to turn away for money, you know. So it's how we do it. So he's a great player and an amazing story for a guy who he didn't go play travel ball and all these things where you look at and there's 12-year-old kids going all across the country spending all their parents' money to be in tournaments and stuff like that.
That sounds like a social commentary.
Well, it is a bit of a social commentary. If you can play baseball, you can play baseball. Now, you have to get found. And that's what things like, you know, the Urban Youth Academy are about here in Kansas City, finding players and introducing players to the game who wouldn't be introduced other ways. There's a big, like a 3 or 4 day camp coming up at the Jewish Community Center this week that the Royals put on. Hundreds of kids out there playing. And some of them are probably going to show up in jean shorts and a collared shirt and not have a glove. But they're going to make sure they get a glove and get some instruction and get introduced to the game. And that's another thing I love about the Royals and about Dayton Moore especially and his passion for the game and what he wants baseball to be.
Nate Bucchetti, any final thoughts on Lorenzo Cain before we move on to another topic?
Well, one of the things, you know, I think the thing that we probably remember the most about the World Series teams was the potentially the greatest bullpen in the history of the game, right? If there was one thing that was truly elite about that team, because we talked earlier about how really it was really just a lot of good players, not maybe so much great players, but just a whole team full of really good players. But that bullpen was as good as it was. But the other thing I think, if there's one thing that was right up there with in terms of being maybe the best we've ever seen in the game, it was the defensive outfield when Alex Gordon, Lorenzo Cain, and Gerard Dyson were all on the field at the same time. And remember, they would sometimes bring in Dyson to start games so that the three of them could play in the outfield together. Sometimes they would bring Dyson off the bench so that those three could play in the outfield together. But I remember during that 2014 run reading some sort of statistics and you know, one of those like kind of next gen type breakdowns of the defense that the Royals played when those three guys were on the field. And I don't remember what the specific number was, but there was some kind of crazy number about how only like 16 fly balls actually ever hit the ground when those three guys were playing together. It was some just ridiculous number like that, like out of 100 plus balls that were hit into the outfield in the air, if those guys, the three of them were out there, the ball never hit the ground because they all could cover so much ground. And, Kane was the best of all of them. Even though Jerod Dyson's top end speed might have been faster than Kane, his jumps were perfect, and his routes to the ball, like, you know, they would map them, like, instead of taking some big looping route.
You mean like a Nori Aoki route?
Yeah, something like that. He was straight to the ball. Like, his first step was amazingly straight to the ball all the time. And I think that's less – you have to really watch a team on a day-in, day-out basis to really appreciate how good that is compared to guys that just hit home runs. You just notice that, right? And that team, to me, that was the thing that was so fun to watch, is they had all these fly ball pitchers in this big ballpark, and these guys that could, that were just incredible athletes that could go get the ball every time. And that's one of the biggest memories I have of Kane.
And one of the things, I know, Nate, you were in the clubhouse a lot. He didn't really like to talk to the media. It wasn't like he didn't like us or anything like that. He just didn't like to just kind of speak publicly, right?
So he didn't like the attention.
No, yeah, he didn't like
he was kind of shy.
Yeah, he was kind of shy. And he was always, he had a little like I say, he would say, like I say, like about every five things.
It was like, he was his always little, very little nice, catch. Though, I thought.
Super nice guy. He would he would love it when someone else would also do something that night, and then they would have to talk to the media, and he would just, like, not do it. But he was gracious and nice when he did it, but he didn't really like
about
to do it.
Like some guys are jerks about that stuff.
He was just really just didn't want the attention.
Okay, so this is I'm glad you're here for this, because I want you to do this. So a good listener, Lim, was asking about, you know, where Lo Kane ranks amongst Royal center fielders of our lifetime. Now here's the deal. I'm not going to ask you for career, because, you know, I mean, not very many Royal center fielders spent their whole career with the Royals, right?
Right.
What I'll ask you is, in a Royals uniform, at their peak, at their best, give me the top five Royal center fielders all around at their peak. Not their body of work, just like what they were at their very, very best, who you'd want on your team in your lineup. For that particular year, just for a year.
Well, Kane is in there, and he might be the top for me, honestly.
Oh, really?
I mean, Johnny Damon was an incredible catalyst for a team, but they just weren't any good, right? It was tough.
But that's not his fault. I mean, you know, just...
Well, no, it's not. Maybe. Willie Wilson was an amazing athlete and player, who also, by the way, led the league in hitting one year.
Right.
Okay.
Stole 83 bases one year.
Yeah, Lorenzo Cain would have been so good on those Royals. He would have fit right in with those Royals back in the 70s. I'm going to put those three. And Amos Otis before Willie Wilson had a much better arm. You know, Cain had a really good arm, too. Willie's arm wasn't great. Johnny Damon's arm was atrocious. So if I'm putting it all together, I'm still... Carlos Beltran is the same thing as Damon, just really bad teams. I'll Nate, you go first.
Easy.
It's not easy.
Make him go first so we can criticize
I'm going
him.
Amos Otis, Carlos Beltran, Lorenzo Cain, Willie Wilson. I mean, I guess Johnny Damon would be fifth.
Johnny Damon, he was a stat filler. You go back and look at his numbers in Kansas City.
He just got better every year.
Yeah.
And then the prime of his career he spent in other places. And Beltran did too, but Beltran had a year, like in 2003, Beltran was a huge reason that team actually competed for the division.
Right.
He was a five-tool player. And
who's your sleeper? I know who your sleeper is. Tell me David DeJesus is on your mind somewhere.
He wasn't a center fielder.
You loved him, though. He played in the outfield. He probably played a little center field.
He was a left fielder, though. He wasn't a center fielder.
I'm going to say I'm putting Lorenzo Cain at his peak right there with Carlos Beltran as a Royal. And I don't know. Tell me what the WAR numbers say. I bet they're very similar for their very best year. Lorenzo Cain had the best overall things like that analytical stuff, the WAR. He was better than all the other players in the Royals during 14 and 15,
everything.
I think.
He's a five-tool player at his prime.
Yeah.
But so was Amos Otis, and so was Beltran.
For sure.
I'm probably biased towards Amos Otis, and I watched him the least, so I'm kind of going off of what my dad always said about him more than my own eyes. But
what about what
back,
you saw? Remove him then. Who about what? Based on what you saw.
Right. Then Beltran, Cain, Willie, Damon, and then maybe B-Mac after Damon, right? Am I missing anybody else?
Yeah.
Tom Goodwin was really fast.
Yeah, he was just fast.
I'm going Willie Wilson one.
Willie Wilson number one.
He's probably my favorite to watch. Curtis sent this thing out a few weeks ago. I still didn't find this thing. This walk-off grand or this walk-off inside the park home run he hit on Saturday afternoon baseball.
Oh yeah, I saw that when that was awesome.
Dude was so freaking fast. It wasn't even funny. Ball hits the gap and then back with that, you know, field. It was just gone. He was just gone.
But what's crazy about Willie, I mean, he was a great player. Great player. There just wasn't much power to his game, which is ironic cuz he was a big guy.
Yeah.
You know, he's a big, strong guy, but he didn't hit for any power at all. And his arm wasn't really anything special either. You
Excuse
know?
Me. Willie Wilson had an 8.6 war in 1980. That's
Thank
better
you.
Than Lorenzo Cain ever did. I'm going to go Willie, probably. That's pretty good. Carlos Beltran could hit the ball over the wall, both sides.
Nate wants to mock me for Willie Wilson, but what does war say? His precious war.
there you go. Hey.
How about this? So here we go. This is interesting.
200-plus hits.
Single season. Top 10 leaders as far as war for the Royals, right? 1980, George Brett, 9.4.
And Willie the same year.
1979, George Brett, 8.6.
And then Willie?
1980, Willie Wilson, 8.6.
Yeah.
And then 85, George Brett, 8.3. 77, George Brett, 7.6. Daryl Porter,
yeah, hit a
79,
7.6.
Then George
Brett. That
team
did make the playoffs.
George Brett, 1976, 7.5. And then Amos Otis, 78, 7.4.
And then Alex Gordon probably shows up there.
Mick Gordon, 7.3. And then John Mayberry, 7.2. I need to expand these leaderboards.
Willie was something. And, you know, in 1980, he didn't walk a lot. He had like 700 and some at bats. I'm not talking about plate appearances. He just played every day, and he just put the ball in play. And batted three something.
Oh, my God. So in 1980, Willie Wilson had 705 at bats.
I had a baseball card that said that. I would think it was a major league record or something.
Okay, so he led the league in 745 plate appearances. He led the league with 705 at bats. He led the league with 133 runs scored. He led the league with 230 hits. He had led the league with 15 triples. And he was fourth in the MVP voting. And he won a gold glove.
It's a pretty good year.
And he stole 79 bases.
And he was the second best player on the team because George even had a higher war there. And George only played 115 games or whatever and had a war of almost 9, or had 9.4 war.
And Willie had that stretch where he hit 315, 326, 303, and then 332. He won the batting title in 82. Yeah, I'm going to have to go Willie.
Willie, let's go Willie.
I have to go Willie 1, Otis 2, or
the
Otis
is,
1, Willie 2.
He's
and then
really
Lorenzo
let his
Cain
body
3.
Go. When's the last time you saw Willie? Just, yeah, it's terrible.
He looks like he hit could, triple
seriously,
today.
Seriously, he's in incredible shape.
And see, like you said, I did see Amos Otis. I remember sitting out in the crowd, chanting, Ayo, Ayo.
Yeah.
But they weren't on TV all the time. You couldn't see
all
the games.
That's all I really remember, though, is doing the AO chant, because I was a little kid.
But I might, do I go Amos Otis first, maybe?
No, I go
Willie Wilson. Willie Wilson 1, Amos Otis 2.
Lorenzo Cain,
Lorenzo Cain 3.
Put a flag up. Let's go 3.
Lorenzo Cain 3.
Put a flag up.
There it is.
Yeah. Done.
Yes, that's my top 3.
Bam.
Boom. And war agrees with me.
You love war.
Really? Only when it proves me right.
Yeah. War would have told
Nate,
Willie.
Now, one more chance at this.
Walk more.
Go ahead.
Well. Yeah, I'm sticking. I think I'm a little biased towards the guys that have more tools, you know, and I just feel like Amos Otis, Beltran, and Cain were all 5-tool players in their prime. And so I'm sticking with it. And
shouldn't 5 tools lead to war?
Right.
Yeah, well. Maybe Willie's tools that he had, and I will say this too. I was 4 years old in 1980. Right.
Willie was also a leadoff hitter, so that's what you know. He's getting on base for George Brett. And
well, and hey, I mean, if you're stealing 79 bases compared to 30, like that tool is a lot better than a guy that I mean, you know.
And he won a batting title.
Yeah. I mean, I'm not going to sit here and say you're wrong. But that's
Sounds
what's
like
kind of fun
are.
About it is
that's
it's
exactly
what
you're saying.
Little eye of the beholder, you know, and that's pretty crazy to think. Those are four pretty darn good
He had more hits in any season than any Royal ever.
Yeah.
We had a dog named Otis when I was
when
a kid.
Did you
named after Amos.
I didn't know this dislike for Willie Wilson. When did this well, how did this come about?
Oh no, I like Willie Wilson a lot. Huh. I liked him a lot.
Yeah, good for me.
Yeah. But my dad loved Amos Otis.
But that shouldn't take away from Willie Wilson.
Well, but see, my dad was funny like this. He was so loyal. He loved Cookie Rojas and Amos Otis. We had a cat named Rojas and a dog named Otis when I was a kid because my dad and mom named our pets after Royals players.
Shouldn't that cat have been named Cookie? It's a better name.
They were all the last names. We had a dog named Brett, a dog named Otis, and a cat named Rojas.
Beautiful.
And my dad loved those two guys. It took him a long time to accept Willie Wilson and Frank White on the team because
they
those
took
guys,
their places. Yeah,
he saw them as guys that pushed those guys out too early. And in his mind,
when Willie Wilson came up, he played some left, and you know,
Cookie Rojas. My grandpa loved Cookie Rojas. He rode in a convertible with him in a parade one time in KCK. But let me tell you, he was not the player that Frank White was.
So look, I don't remember watching Cookie. I didn't get to really. I remember having the cat Rojas, but I don't remember watching him. But I'm just telling you, that's how my dad. That's what I heard a lot in my house. My dad was. He was so mad at Frank White and Willie Wilson for taking his favorite players' jobs.
Yeah.
That it took him a while. I mean, I think by the end he finally came around, but he always kind of was stubborn about it, you know.
Well, that doesn't sound right.
Let me just get this out here. I know Frank listens to the show. Frank White, Willie Wilson, Stephen St. John here. I support you. I back both of you.
Even though Nate doesn't.
And I love both of you. Okay. I recognize you gave me a tremendous amount of joy as a child, sure. And you are right there at the top of my list. I could promise you. I could promise
well, what
you
funny,
that.
What was funny was actually later in life, after my dad had moved out to Johnson County, he ended up living next door to Willie Wilson, and they became like pretty good friends. And
this is going to play into your fancy boy, fancy lad Nate.
Well, I didn't live there, but my dad did. Well, I'd come visit my dad, and we'd play basketball in the driveway with Willie, and I would always tell my dad, like, hey, you gonna tell him stuff you used to say about him when he took Amos Otis' job?
No, he's fine now. We like Willie
Willie's
now.
A great player. Obviously, I think everybody knows that Frank White, you know, he's one of the all-time legends with the Kansas City Royals. And I got to work with Frank for a while, which was one of the coolest things ever for me, you know, so I don't have anything – those guys were all legendary players, all of them.
It's one of the thrills. I mean, if people of our age, and I'm putting myself in your age, Nate, even though I'm much older than you, because I was 10 in 1980. But these guys meant so much to us when we were kids because baseball was so big and there wasn't other things going on. The Chiefs were not any good and the Royals were such a big deal. But it's, like, so wild when you get this job and, like you know, we used to have Frank White on the air when I used to produce Kevin's show and stuff like that. So, like, I would have to text him or call him and say, hey, what time we're going to do something or whatever. And I remember, like, being at dinner once and, like, my phone rang and it said Frank White on it. And someone looked at and says, that's Frank White calling you? And they were like, you know, holy smokes, Frank White is calling your phone. I'm like, yeah, that's pretty wild, isn't it? That's the life I lead now. Can't believe, like, your childhood hero is calling you to ask you what time we're going to do an interview or something like that. It's amazing. And that's what Lorenzo Cain is to a whole other generation of kids. The sad part is, like, where Frank White played his entire career here, Willie Wilson almost his entire career, George Brett his entire career. These guys played for large chunks, not the 6 years pre-arbitration and then go cash checks. They all played a long, long time. And to have that connection with them is just amazing. And that's the sad part about baseball now, is that, like, your kids – loved Lorenzo Cain, right? But then he was just gone, you know, because the Royals couldn't afford to pay him. It was a sad deal. It happened with all of them. Jermaine Dye, Johnny Damon. My son had a Build-A-Bear named Jermaine Dye, and then Jermaine Dye was gone. I tried to explain to him, well, this is baseball. They had to trade Jermaine Dye. He can't be here anymore. Alex Gordon said Salvi's here. That's great.
Let's say hello to Frank Bull, who's just called in.
Hello, gentlemen.
Hello, Frank. How are you?
All right, I just want to put a caveat on top of Willie Wilson, okay? He was my favorite center fielder. I coached football at Villanova after I graduated. We were watching an old Super 8 tape, Summit High School, New Jersey, we're looking at an offensive lineman from Summit High School. There's this kid in the backfield. He touched the ball 6 times in the first half of the football game. He scored 5 touchdowns. It was Willie Wilson.
Yeah.
Damn.
He was an incredible player.
Yeah.
He had a full ride to Maryland. He was being recruited by virtually everybody in the country, Penn State, everybody. And he had a full ride, accepted a full ride to Maryland. Before then, he was drafted out of high school and turned it down and went to minor league baseball. So.
Did you guys get that lineman?
Yes, we did get the lineman. Yeah, but the deal was he really didn't have to block.
He got to Villanova, and Willie Wilson wasn't there. Wasn't it quite as good, was he?
That's exactly right. He had no one like Willie Wilson in the backfield. Yeah, he was just incredible. We're just mesmerized. Just said, "Good Lord,
He would have been an incredible NFL wide receiver.
Oh,
I don't think there's any doubt.
So fast. Yeah, he's fun to watch. I loved Willie. Still do. Good man.
So who's
Willie's his number one.
So who's number two?
I like Beltran, and then probably Kane, although we're probably overlooking Amos Otis a little bit. But Kane, because of recency bias. Otis, I really didn't get to see Amos play. When I came up, Willie Wilson was the center fielder when I arrived in Kansas City back in 81. So he was always my favorite. I love guys who could run like that. And Lorenzo Kane could run, too. I mean, there's another terrific athlete, so fast. Big, strong, and fast. Willie didn't hit for power, but Willie was if he'd slapped the ball in the infield, every infielder was nervous to get that ball to first base.
It's amazing. The game's so different now without the turf. The real old-school AstroTurf just was a different baseball game getting played on that compared to even the field turf stuff now or the regular grass. Different, entirely different baseball game. Because they just told Willie, just slap the ball into the ground and run.
Yes, go. You could just see the infielders fumbling the ball, especially if they had a guy on first already. They're trying to turn a double play to get out of an inning. He was almost impossible to turn a double play on.
Yeah, it was awesome.
He was unbelievable, yeah. Just wanted to chime in. Love you, boys.
Love you too, Frank.
I can't believe you're up this early, Frank. Right. Normally you're sleeping into like 10 or something.
Oh, come on. You know better. That old people don't sleep.
He's been up for 2 hours.
Two?
I've already had my sit. I've had my sit.
You had your sit. Are you going to go and have a nap and then go play a little golf?
Absolutely. Take a little mid-morning nap. Go out, slap the golf ball around a little bit. There you go.
Just another Monday. Good deal.
Another Monday. Just another Monday.
All right, Pudgy.
Thank you, Frank.
All right, boys. Talk to you.
We will we'll take a break. Back after this on Sports Radio 810 WHB. All right, DeMarco, play a clip from Matt Fitzpatrick, winner of the U.S. Open. Just play his feelings on winning the U.S. Open, and we can get Todd Lebo to comment on what he saw from this weekend's tournament.
Unbelievable, yeah. It's just the feelings out of this world. It's so cliche, but it's stuff you dream of as a kid. And, to achieve it, I can retire a happy man tomorrow.
What did you think of the U.S. Open?
I thought it was a fine tournament, you know, some good drama at the end. It, the course wasn't too crazy, you know. Sometimes they set these U.S. Open courses up so wild that you can't, guys were under par. Okay, that's good. Sometimes it's just bogey, bogey, bogey. He held his own, right? I mean, this is a guy who's like, he's like 27 years old. He's been on the tour for a while. He turned pro after like one semester of college. He's from England, but he came over here to play golf at Northwestern. And then he was like, all right, I'm going to go play. I'm playing pro. I'm not going to go through all this college stuff. And he's done fine, right? He's won some tournaments over in Europe and stuff like that. But he hasn't really broken through here. And now you win the U.S. Open, you've broken through, right? It's a pretty amazing thing. So it was good enough. You know, Zalatoris is going to win one of these sometime. He almost has won a couple of times this year. He's putting a little bit better than he was. But I thought it was nice. I don't know about you guys. You'd sit there and turn this on, like yesterday especially, and people are in long sleeves because it was 60 degrees. I really, really, really wanted to be in Boston yesterday as opposed to being 95 degrees here. But it was a nice deal, and it's just good. We're going to watch this over this next little bit. It's going to be really interesting with these guys who are they going to be able to play in some of these majors who are on this LIV tour. And there are more players who are going to be leaving and going to that now. And golf's going to get a little ugly here for a while with the stuff back and forth there, which I guess I'm not complaining for people. You want to go get your money. But it's going to be a little confusing for people who are like, why doesn't he play here? What's this other thing? There are tours all over the world, but generally speaking, people who go play on like the European tour occasionally will come over here to America, right? And they'll play in the majors and some others. And if you're not good enough to be on the PGA tour, maybe you'll go play on the Asian tour or the European tour. But this is going to be, it's going to be weird here for a bit. With this other tour popping up and this kind of guaranteed money, which I think is great because I think they probably should change it. You know, in the past, and there's a little bit of money now for some of these guys. In the past, but you didn't make the cut. You lost money that weekend, right? Because you still got to, like, pay your caddy and be at the hotel and your travel and your airfare and all that because you didn't make any money at all if you didn't make the cut. There was no check, no nothing. I think what they'll do is they'll probably should – make it to where if you're in the tournament, if you've made the field, you should get a guaranteed something. Because if they don't do that, people are looking at this money over in this LIV tour, and they're like, well, I'm just going to go take that money. You know? Even though, do you know how to watch the LIV tour?
No.
Do you know when the next event is?
No.
Okay. Well, that's how most people are. You watch it on YouTube. Just like actual
YouTube. Have you watched it?
No. I didn't watch it.
Why not?
What are their numbers? Are they getting good viewers?
I didn't see. They only had one tournament, right? And there were people watching it, I think, out of curiosity. The golf wasn't great. And most of the attention a couple of weeks ago was the sideshow. Like, the guy who had written the book about Phil Mickelson getting told, did you see this a couple of weeks ago? He got basically strong-armed out of the press conference, told he wasn't welcome there. And he sent this text to Greg Norman, who is the guy behind the tour, and he said, hey, man, your people strong-armed me out of the press conference. And Greg Norman's like, I hadn't heard that. I'm sorry to hear it. And then this video surfaced of them actually talking to him and kicking him out, and Greg Norman standing right in the background with this look on his face. And so, like, this the writer tweeted all this stuff, the picture of Greg Norman and the response from Greg Norman. So that's what's happening. That's more interesting than the golf at this point. But we'll watch this as it goes, and see how it kind of works out. But it's a lot of money. I get it, man. In the PGA Tour, we had these guys here for Korn Ferry, you know, at Blue Hills a few weeks ago. And I talked to a couple guys here in the studio that we put up on the web, these kids who played at KU, Andy Spencer and Charlie Hillier. And they're dying to get on the PGA Tour, right? I mean, they would love anything more than to be an exempt player for 1 year on the PGA Tour because it means – that if you go out there and you get a couple of top 25s or whatever, it's amazing money. They had just come from, I think they were in Ecuador playing golf on PGA Latin American Tour, where the purses are so much smaller. So these are guys from Kansas, and Charlie is from New Zealand, came to America to play golf. I mean, that was his goal. He wanted to get on the PGA Tour, so you come to America, you play at KU, right? You go do this. And they're all over the world trying to get on the PGA Tour, and some of these guys are on the PGA Tour saying, eh, I'll just go take this guaranteed money to play on this other tour because there's a big amount of money. It's like, sure, I'll go play for the Yankees or whatever. It's just like guaranteed this. And these guys are making real decisions because it's not a union. So it's not like you're crossing a picket line, but the PGA Tour is telling you, if you go do this, you can't ever come back. And then there's the uncertainty. Well, what if this thing doesn't work? Are they just going to pull the plug on it? You're going to be out, you know, and does it mean something to win the LIV this? As opposed to, it really means something. I mean, you guys don't even watch a lot of golf, but you know when someone wins the U.S. Open, oh, yeah, that guy, he won the U.S. Open that 1 year. This guy won this. And will they be allowed to play in some of these other tournaments if they're on that one? It's wild times in golf.
Nate Ducati, you were out in L.A. for Sporting Kansas City. Tell people how Sporting Kansas City did yesterday.
Yeah, so I was in L.A., but their game was in Nashville. I called it from a studio here, but they went to Nashville, and they got a big 2-1 victory over a Nashville team. This is crazy. They're in their third year after being an expansion team in 2020, and they just opened their brand-new soccer-specific stadium, and it's a beautiful stadium, 30,000 people. And Nashville's actually, this was their seventh game at home. They hadn't lost at their new stadium yet this year. They didn't lose last year. They played in Nissan Stadium where the Titans play. They had a 25-game home unbeaten streak. And here comes Sporting Kansas City and dead last in the West after all the stuff they've dealt with this year. And Sporting beat them 2-1. But that's the seventh time under Peter Vermes that Sporting have given a team their first ever loss in their new building.
Don't bring Sporting to town. That's the deal.
That's pretty impressive. That's pretty crazy. But it was a fun game to get to call. And Graham Zusi had, he had this incredible goal. But it's a goal that he scored like the almost exact same goal two or three times in his career with his left foot. And he's not a left-footed player. He's just one of those guys that's, he's a two-footed player. He can strike the ball almost as well with his left foot as he can with his right. And this was a long-range shot. I mean, it was world-class. And that's what ended up being the winner for Sporting, which was pretty cool.
It was. They really needed a win, right? Do you sense the feeling that things could be turning the right direction? I mean, 3 points is monstrous on the road, and they've been better as of late, right? They've lost a couple, but you know they had a real stretch there where they couldn't get anything done. Do you feel like this is something that can turn around because they're going to Seattle next, right? Or they're playing Seattle, and Seattle's right on that edge of the playoff line. You feel like things, this is something they can take a bounce from?
Well, you certainly hope so. They have a lot of work to do to get themselves back into the playoff picture. I mean, you know, it's, in fact, going into this past weekend, they had no team that has had as low of a point total as Sporting at this point in the season has ever come back to go to the playoffs. Now, that doesn't mean they can't do it because they're not that far out when it comes to the point total, but they got to jump a lot of teams, which means they're going to have to win some. They're going to have to put together some sort of winning streak at some point here. Going to Nashville and then to Seattle, that's a pretty tough 1-2 punch. And I do think they're starting to get some guys back. Like Graham Zusi was hurt for a while. He was back. Daniel Shalloway was back from international duty, and Kyrie Shelton was back from being injured. But, you know, they're going to be without two of their three designated players for the entire year, which is just a lot to overcome. If anybody can do it, I think it's Sporting because of the kind of personality and never give up type attitude they have. And I will say this, a couple of young guys in Felipe Hernandez and Cam Duke are starting to finally, I think, grow and mature and realize what it takes to play at this level. And we're seeing them improve and become everyday Major League Soccer players in front of our eyes, but it's coming with a lot of growing pains. Those two guys played really, really well yesterday, but then Duke ends up making a big mistake that leads to Nashville scoring a goal. Nashville couldn't really create anything all game, and as long as Sporting were organized defensively, they couldn't do much, but Cam Duke, you know, turned the ball over that led to a fast break opportunity for Nashville, and they scored, and the next thing you know, now all of a sudden Nashville's in the game. They feel like they've got a shot. They started, throwing numbers forward. There was one point where it looked like Nashville was going to be awarded a penalty. Then they decided to review it at the last second for offside, and they took the penalty away because there was a player that was just barely offside for Nashville. So, I mean, it was a really tense finish to the game where you just wondered at any moment if Nashville was going to score and tie the game up, and a lot of that came because of a big mistake by Duke, but he played a really, really good game. And I think all those things are learning experiences. But when you have players that you're counting on like that are learning on the job, it makes it hard. So but they're bringing in a couple of guys. There's these reports are bringing in a German midfielder named Eric Tommy. They're bringing in a striker who's – remember. He's been playing in Israel professionally. And we'll see. Those guys might be able to give him a little bit of a boost. Mm-hmm. If they do, you know, they might be able to make a push. Well, they're not going to go down without a fight.
They went like 6 weeks without they scored like 3 points in 6 weeks. Had like three draws. And now, I mean, they got three in a game. So there you go. That's just better for you. Tell me how.
It's the first road win of the season.
How weird was this for you professionally? You like you said, you flew to Los Angeles to call a game on national TV of the team that you call games for normally with a sporting bent to it. What was it like to be a neutral announcer for a game like this?
It is a little weird. I was actually texting with John Strong, who is he's the number one play-by-play guy for Fox Soccer. You know, whenever there's a game on Fox, if it's a U.S. national team game or the top games, I was calling this game because he was doing the Westminster Dog Show.
Oh, yeah.
And so I was filling in for him. And, you know, he used to be the play-by-play announcer for the Portland Timbers. And he told me, like, yeah, when he first, and that was some of the advice he gave me was, you know, his experience was you're so concerned about not coming off as a homer for the team that you usually cover that you almost overcompensate and go the other
way. Go the other way, yeah.
You know, you end up like just loving up the other team like crazy the whole time. And so, you know, he said it's a little trickier than people realize in that regard, but because it puts you in a tricky spot. Like, you know, we're all of a sudden I'm on conference calls with the head coach from Nashville and asking him for inside information about his team and stuff. And you can tell he's a little bit like, I don't know if I want to tell you that, you know? And
you got a direct line to Peter Vermees. I'm not telling you nothing.
Yeah. So, hey, I know who signs my paycheck whenever I'm working, and I try to make sure I, you know,
work for them. Yeah,
I work for them at that time, and so it was fun though. I mean, it was. I love it. I mean, I love getting a chance to come out here and the little kid in me that always wanted to be a sportscaster my whole life to sit here and get to like pull up to the Fox lot and get my little day pass.
Pretty cool,
you know, and walk in with my little badge and you know all that stuff. It's
He's like walking on a lot, like in The Offer, Stephen. Like he's out there running. He's Al Ruddy.
Booby.
Walk out there. What's up, Booby?
Hey, Booby. You're going to be a star, Booby.
You can do it.
Did you, so before we ran out of time for the segment, what did you guys think of the weekend for the Royals?
They lost. I thought you were going to ask about the College World Series.
I will in a minute.
Okay.
The fabulous catch diving into the dugout. What did you think of the Royals?
Hey, they won a couple of games.
They won a couple of games.
If you're playing a team that's supposed to be as bad or worse than you, you should win more than you don't. So that's a successful day or weekend, but then not scoring against the A's is probably embarrassing.
Right.
So
against a guy that now has a 6.59 ERA.
Yeah.
But they're 23-42 now after winning a couple of games against Oakland. They lost yesterday 4-0. And so, not a bad weekend for the Royals. College World Series.
Oh.
There you go.
Did Gary Lezak know the Sooners are in this
Not
thing?
Not really.
Well, they're in it now.
Right.
They're a win away from making the final.
Who are you rooting for between Texas A&M and Texas when they played?
Oh, I was rooting for A&M just to get rid of Texas. It was funny.
Yeah?
Yeah.
That was a big loss for Texas to lose to Texas A&M in an elimination game.
Get sent home and not win a game.
That's a tough one.
The interesting part now is the way this bracket works is A&M and Notre Dame each have a loss, right? So they're going to play each other tomorrow, and then the winner will play Oklahoma and have to beat them twice. And A&M is the better team than Notre Dame. So in a way, you're probably rooting as a Sooner fan for Notre Dame to make it because you don't really feel like Notre Dame is going to beat you twice. But you just really don't want to have to play that game. You don't want you just want them both to like somehow lose, and you just get ushered into the final. Because the fear is now you're going to just lose two games in a row and not make the final. Like I was joking before, Oklahoma's a good baseball team. They're not at the level of some of these teams. And if they make the final, for me, that's just an amazing thing, right? But A&M is really, really good, and they somehow beat them that first day. They really jumped on them, scored a whole lot of runs. I don't think they want to play them again. But here's the problem. Notre Dame, I don't know if you watched this last night, all these guys have mustaches because they watched Top Gun Maverick.
Right.
And there's something very unlikable for me. I love you, Timmy. Tim Grunhardt, I know you went to Notre Dame. Matt Beisler went to Notre Dame. It's great, blah, blah. I don't like Notre Dame. I don't like this baseball team.
Why don't you like Notre
Dame? I don't
Dame?
Like their hokey stuff. They had these bananas they brought out, their rally bananas, where they all took a bite of them in the seventh inning when something good happened. And then we turned a double play, and I texted all my buddies, throw those bananas away. It's over for you guys. But College baseball. Wow. We talk about baseball having a problem, taking too long to play. Sitting there last night watching.
This thing's taking forever.
27-minute top of the or bottom of the eighth for the Sooners. They didn't score, and it took 27 minutes because of a couple of reviews and pitching changes and this, like, you know, pitch after pitch, walks and fouling it off and all this stuff. They have a pitch clock in college baseball. That's supposed to speed it up, right? That's the idea. Seriously, that's what it's supposed to do, right? You only have a certain amount of time to pitch. Well, they figured out a way to get around that. You step off, and that restarts the clock, right? So there was a thing where this guy stepped off. It looked like he balked. So then they had to have about a three-minute meeting of the umpires to talk about
maybe
the pitch
clock. Right.
So you know what happened? The pitch clock slowed the game down. Anyway, I'm very happy the Sooners have won two games, and they are where they are. And it's a neat event, man. Omaha loves that event, and they put it on really nice. And I hope in some way Oklahoma could find a way to the weekend, because if that happens, maybe I'll find my way to Omaha.
I was going to say, any inclination to go up there?
100% inclination. I would have loved to have gone this weekend. It was just too busy. I had the anniversary, and yesterday was
so
Father's Day.
So where are we at
now?
So
today, the bottom bracket will play their two games. Arkansas,
Auburn and Stanford, and Arkansas and Ole Miss.
Yeah, so Arkansas and Ole Miss, that's the one to go 2-0 and to be undefeated in the spot that Oklahoma's in. Elimination game for Stanford. Down there, Stanford's number two in the country. This would be amazing. Arkansas beat them 17-2. So after that, then we will have two teams that are undefeated, and then those teams will wait, and then you'll go through. So what happens then? The two teams that make it to Saturday, then everything's wiped clean, and you play a best of three series. So if Oklahoma just has to win a game, and they will make it to that, and that means that they're going to play either A&M. Or Notre Dame, and that team will have to beat them on consecutive days to keep.
You'd rather
them out
play
there.
Notre Dame,
I think so. They're not quite as good as A&M, but also they do have the rally bananas. So
will you go up
and
there?
And
the
mustaches.
Not?
I will 100% make every effort I can to be up there.
Who
Saturday.
You go up there with?
With probably my wife.
None of your fellow Sooners.
I think Lance definitely would like to go. We were talking about it before. I don't know what his schedule's like this week. I haven't talked to him today. But you don't talk about these things till they.
Yeah, you got to go
chance.
Up there.
You got they're not going yet. They need to win a game.
How hard are tickets to get? Like, what are we talking about?
Yeah, it's expensive probably for that. But what you hope is, if you actually made it to the final, that it's not Arkansas. You hope Stanford somehow makes it, because they don't have like.
Yeah, Arkansas buy all the tickets.
Arkansas buy all the tickets. I saw this thing. One of these bars has Jello shot o-meter or something like
right.
that. And Arkansas fans had already bought over 1,000 of them like 3 days ago, and like Stanford's fans had bought like 24. So it was like,
you don't want Arkansas.
They're calling the Hogs up there. And
that's
they
right.
look they are a team that got hot late, because they've been disappointing this year. That's where Dayton Morrison plays for them, right? And they beat Stanford 17-2, and that was a really amazing win for them. So they'll see what they do today. I'll say congratulations. We got a kid from Blue Valley High School, true freshman playing for Oklahoma, Jackson Nicholas.
Mm-hmm.
Doing great, hit a grand slam in game one. Making things happen last night.
Finally, Oklahoma getting some success.
Something happening in the sport.
In the sport. We will be right back after this on WHB. Welcome back to the Border Patrol on Sports Radio 810 WHB. Let's say hello to Gary Lezak. Gary, you say you're going to a weather convention, yet immediately you injure your hamstring. Things right. aren't adding up for me.
I know. Well, I was on my way for a walk to breakfast, and I was practicing my roundhouse kicks, because I love the UFC, and I was
what?
Practicing these roundhouse kicks.
On the streets or in the hotel?
Along the river, and I was practicing these roundhouse kicks, and I got to this area, and this dove flies by, and I did a roundhouse kick, and I hit the dove. It looked at me and stunned, and I pulled my hamstring. Oh!
I don't believe this story one bit.
Now tell us what really happened.
I was walking and texting, and I bumped into a bench.
So, but bumping into the bench hurt your hamstring?
Well, I was texting, and I didn't, I don't know Milwaukee, and I was walking along the river on my way to breakfast.
It's like when Jake got lost in Milwaukee.
Right.
And I I was walking. Next thing I know, boom! My left leg hits this bench, and I didn't see it coming. And I grabbed the bench with my right hand to hold me up, and my right leg planted, and zoop, I didn't tear the hamstring, but I pulled it.
Do you have a bunch of blood gathering back there and a big bruise?
No, gross? I don't really see that. Okay. That's good. It's probably good.
That
it's
is good. Not
a, yeah, so I think it'll heal maybe 3 weeks, 4 weeks. You know, I am 60. It heals slower. And, yes, by the way, Lebo, I know it's shocking, but I watched the Sooners beat the Irish yesterday. How
good.
About that?
Very happy to hear that. They're a fun team. They're scrappy. They remind me of the old Royals running around, taking extra bases, getting thrown out of the base pass too often. But
yeah, that one inning where they got thrown out at third twice.
Hey, what's the cardinal rule of base running, guys? Don't get the first or third out at third base, correct?
Right.
They did both of those in one inning.
Both in one inning. First and the third out.
It was not pretty.
The last one, the throw came to third base. The ball bounced away from the third baseman, and he just stood there as if he was out and just waited to get tagged.
Yeah, it was bad. But
anyway, approves, Levi. I watched it. Can you believe it?
I'm happy. You're all in now. You're a true Sooner.
Well, why not? They could win it all, and they have a lot. So they play the winner, Texas A&M, Notre Dame again, right?
That's right. That game? They'll have to play one of those teams, and that team will have to beat them two
times. Why don't you go up to Omaha with Todd if they make it?
I got other medical issues. I'm back to work today, and I got hamstring problems.
What?
I'm really, I got issues. Anyway, I did speak at the conference in Milwaukee, talk about the LRC. A few people have been there for all my talks over the last 20 years, and they see the progress. It's exciting as I bring this technology to the world. And so that went well Friday. Weather-wise in Kansas City, 93 to 94 today, 97 to 98 tomorrow. There are cold fronts showing up. Summer begins tomorrow, and a little bit cooler on Wednesday, about 10 degrees cooler, down to the 80s. It'll heat up again Friday. Another stronger cold front due in around Sunday or Monday, down into the 80s. During the summer, that's usually what you get. You get these fronts that drop in the 80s, occasionally the 70s. It's just hard to get down there. Right now, it's in the 70s. It is 76 degrees right now with a south breeze, 15 miles per hour, and not that humid at this moment. Humidity will increase later. No chance of rain today. A possibility of thunderstorms tomorrow evening, tomorrow night. We'll be monitoring that on KSHB 41. How did Jeff Penner do? Did he do well?
He did great.
Okay, good. I'm glad because, you know, he's filling in, and he, as long as he got a couple hits, you know, that's all I want him to do. So very good. All right. Well, listen, Dr. Troy Burns is amazing, and, you know, I'll be talking to him because I got some issues, Dr. Burns. And when you have a doctor like this, you can get a hold of him, and he tells you exactly what to do. So here he is, Dr. Troy Burns of Pro Partners Healthcare.
Thanks, Gary. Did you know 82 million Americans don't have a doctor? If you're proud that you never go to the doctor, we need to talk. If you're ready to meet a physician who can help you be healthier, live longer, and save money on healthcare, give ProPartners a call or check us out on the web at ProPartnersHealthcare.com.
Number one thing he says is don't text and walk in an unfamiliar city.
Right.
Too late for that, Gary.
Right. I still don't understand how he hurt his hamstring, though.
He's old.
Right.
He's tight like a tiger.
That is right. He is wound tight.
He's always tripping.
100%.
Nate Ducati live in Los Angeles. We'll take a break. Back after this on WHB.